You've got by 96.7 FM WDLR AM 1270 The Show. Off to the races, and we certainly appreciate each and every one of you joining us. We have got a really cool show for you today. Rosie Weaver, Ohio Harness Horseman, a great, great story. There was a great article written about her a week and a half ago by legendary Ohio horse racing author Bob Roberts, scribe, whatever word you want to use to describe Bob, just a great, great writer for a number of years, and wrote a great article on Rosie Weaver and some of the trials and tribulations he's been through, how she got started in the sport, and how she now has been record-setting over the past season in terms of victories. PressProsMagazine.com, you can find that article by Bob Roberts. But we're going to expand on that today with a two-part interview with Rosie Weaver. It was such a cool interview. Please don't touch that dial. You're not going to be disappointed, I guarantee you. Off to the Races this week and every week is brought to you by our good friends, the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Breed in Ohio, buy in Ohio, race in Ohio, and win in Ohio. We're also brought to you by the Ohio State University Veterinary Medical Center. They've got caring down to a science, and Cashman's Horse Equipment Outlet and Drive-Through Feed Store. Visit them online at cashmans.com. Let's get the party started. Rosie Weaver on the other side of the break on Off to the Races, back in a flash.
Love horses? If you show, race, or just like to ride, Ohio State's Galbraith Equine Center is here to help your horse live its best life. Our team of board-certified equine specialists provide world-class medical care and surgical care, 24-hour emergency critical care, neonatal intensive care, and advanced diagnostics and imaging 365 days a year. On-farm care is also available through our Columbus and Marysville locations. Call 614-292-6661. Ohio State's Galbraith Equine Center. Caring down to a science.
Join the fast-paced, exciting world of harness racing. There are hundreds of immediate openings across Ohio for caretakers and grooms. Work with the greatest equine athletes in the country. Standardbred trainers need your help. Health insurance, vision care, prescription benefits, and a retirement plan are available for those that qualify. For more information on how you can be a part of the exciting world of harness racing, call 614-221-3650. That's 614-221-3650.
Cashman's Horse Equipment, proudly serving the equine and livestock community for over 40 years. Do you need rubber mats for your horse stalls? Horse safe fencing for your farm? A round pen to exercise your next winter? Cashman's has you covered, featuring the highest quality items at the best prices. Visit our friendly and knowledgeable team Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and shop over 10 acres of inventory. Conveniently located in Delaware, Ohio on US 42 North, just minutes from the home of the iconic Little Brown Jug. Or shop online anytime at cashmans.com.
And we are back at my 96.7 FM, WDLR AM 1270. You've got Off to the Races, and now we've got a very special guest on the program. Rosie Weaver, horsewoman who had a nice article written about her last week from one of the great writers in Ohio racing, Bob Roberts, for Press Pros Magazine. You can find that article on PressProsMagazine.com. And read that article, Rosie. I thought, listen, you'd be really cool to have on the radio show. I thought it was a cool story. And the first part of it really kind of hit home with me because, you know, I was never really in a horse racing family, so to speak. And I took a liking to it as a fan and got involved that way where, you know, it seems like a lot of people are kind of, you know, born into it. And you're kind of similar in those regards.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of might have, you know, grown up a little bit different than a lot of standardbred harness racing people. Grew up with horses, but they were everything but racehorses.
That's right, and your family. And what kind of horses were you kind of used to?
Well, like I said, everything but racehorses. We had, you know, I grew up on a dairy farm, and we had about 100 acres. And, I mean, growing up Amish, you know, we had draft horses, and there was evenings where I'd come home from school and harness up some draft horses, the big Belgian draft horses, and go work the fields with those. And that's something I actually, as crazy as it sounds, I kind of miss. I love those big draft horses. They were like gentle giants. And so I kind of got used to them. And I went to a different kind of school than most people do nowadays. I had a a one-room schoolhouse that we attended, and I have an eighth grade education, and used to take a pony cart to school, and I had a little Appaloosa pony that we hooked up every morning about 7 o'clock and headed to school about 3 miles. So, yeah, it was quite adventurous growing up.
Now, according to the article, you were actually working in a restaurant in Stark County, Ohio, when you came across an ad.
Yeah, I was working at first when I got out of school at 14. I mean, that's the routine for Amish kids. Still kind of to this day, it's what goes on. And then once we're out of eighth grade, we kind of look for jobs to help support the family. And it's pretty amazing how Amish people work. It's, they work together in the community. And it's just very, very glad that I grew up the way I did, taught me everything I know today, and helped me with the success that I do have. But it was just... I got out of school and I started cleaning houses, you know, on the side kind of for people and just a little extra money for mom and dad. And then I got a full-time job as a grill cook at a restaurant named Alpine Alpa. It was like a Swiss restaurant. And I was in the back flipping burgers and broiling chicken and stuff like that. And I've always been kind of an outdoorsy kind of person. And I mean, it was a job and I work with great people and everything, but I kind of didn't enjoy the whole being indoor thing on a 24/7, 365 basis. You know, it was just a job that whatever I did go to work, it was inside. And so I was kind of looking for something different, hopefully. And like I said, going back to, you know, the lifestyle that I grew up in, Amish, we didn't have TVs. So it was newspapers and bargain hunters that we looked into for news or updates or anything like that. And one evening I was just sitting there scrolling through the bargain hunter, and there was a lady a couple miles down the road that had an ad in the bargain hunter. She was looking for a groom on a standardbred farm and really caught my eye. So I mentioned something to mom, and like I said in the article, they weren't like all for it, but they weren't against it, because I had a good job and, you know, everything was good. But they knew that I loved horses and weren't against me, you know, heading over to check it out. So, you know, a couple weeks later, long story short, it all worked out. We went over and talked to the lady, and she hired me basically on the spot. And I haven't done anything different since that day. That's been over 20 years ago.
Now, Rosie, how different was it working on the farm, you know, for your mom and dad, working with the horses that you were working with, and then you started working with the standardbreds? How different was it working with the standardbreds than the horses that you were working with previous?
Quite different. The only thing is, you know, Amish people still, like I said, to this day, they have the horses that they drive in their buggies are basically, I mean, they're all standardbreds for the most part, and a lot of them are either retired racehorses or racehorses that just didn't have enough speed or had, you know, their conformation might have been too bad or whatever. But I remember growing up, we would go once in a while to a farm, a training center that had horses, and the horse that they might have gave up on, and I do the same thing to this day. Sadly, nowadays, I mean, back when I started, if you had a 2.5 trotter, you had a killer. And now if they don't go in about 58, you're like trying to get rid of them. And maybe like what the term we use is we Amish them. And that's kind of funny to me, because I guess look at that line the same as a lot of trainers do, because when they're like, oh, let's just Amish them. I mean, that was me at one time, you know, that was what we were looking for. And doesn't necessarily mean there's something wrong with the horse. It just means that you're putting more money and effort into a horse that simply can't make its money back on the racetrack, but might still have a very successful life on the road for Amish people, if that makes any sense.
Visiting with trainer Rosie Weaver. Now, Rosie, fast forward, you know, you've really had a fantastic season, single season victories on the Ohio Fair Circuit, 100 races, $822,000 in the bank. I mean, that's especially for primarily racing at the fairs. Those are quite good numbers. And you've had some success at the race as well, but primarily you race at the fairs. Now, tell us the difference, if any, between getting horses ready and racing on the fairs versus racing at the raceways.
Yeah, like you said, the difference, if any, there's really not. I mean, me and my owner strive to have sire stake horses. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. I mean, a few years ago, I was lucky enough to have a world champion. And in order to have a world champion, you have to win sire stake races and stuff. And that was a really nice horse. So, yeah, I do have horses that race, you know, top level. But the competition is just so incredibly tough anymore that if I don't know, I look at the whole thing as in, like, in March when we stake horses, we stake a bunch of them to the Sire Stakes and the Buckeye Stallion Series and the fairs. And but I'm always quick to drop a horse. I mean, there's times, you know, like everybody else in March, April, and May where you think, you know what, this horse is going to be good horse. This horse is going to be a Sire Stake horse. And, well, you know, there's 50 other people around that are thinking the same thing. And they don't always pan out to be. I mean, you know, a lot of horses can look great in May, but when it comes down to those final 6-8 seconds that you're trying to drop, that's major stuff. And I'm just really quick. If I have a horse, a two-year-old especially, and that's all I have is 2 and 3-year-olds, if I can see that they're trying their best for what they can do, the best to their abilities, and if it's chasing after a sire stake horse, like top-level race, and giving it all they got and snagging just a nosed out fifth, I would much rather drop them down, take them to a fair. I know it's less money, but if you really think about it, it's not. Because if you're struggling to grab fifth in a sire stake race and you can win 2 or 3 times at a fair, you're actually ahead money-wise and you're way ahead confidence-wise for your horse if you're building up a racehorse. And that's what I strive to do. I mean, I love, this is one of my favorite times of the year. I'm done racing after November 1st. And one of my favorite times of the year is now to sit back and watch horses that I once broke and trained that couldn't trot any faster than I can. And I can't go fast. You know what I mean? And then to watch them in 2 years develop into a very nice racehorse and then sell them to people and have them make like long racing careers out of them. And that's what I enjoy, sitting back some nights when the snow's flying and watch horses that basically me and my stable, you know, my crew made into racehorses. It's just a very satisfying thing for me to do and see. And it means to me anyways, it's like, I'm not married and I don't have any kids, but it's like I have a whole bunch of kids at the barn. And it's like they're graduating high school and they're going on to have careers. And that is when I sell them to trainers who have racehorses, not young horses. And I sit there and I watch them just blossom into superstars. And it just makes me feel like my job was accomplished. And in order to do that, I think the fairs all day long will make a long-term racehorse a lot quicker than a sire stake if they're not in the top 3 or 4 being the best. Because if they're always chasing, it just gradually trims their desire and their fight away, because they're just giving it all they got, but it just isn't quite enough.
We'll have more with horsewoman Rosie Weber after this time out on Off to the Races on my 96.7 FM AM 1270.
It's known as the Great American Harness Race, the Little Brown Jug, and it's held right here in Delaware, Ohio. Why? Because Ohio is the heartland of harness racing. In Ohio, the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association keeps things running smoothly and is here to make sure that harness racing remains strong. Breed in Ohio, buy in Ohio, race in Ohio, and win in Ohio. Join us and keep Ohio as the driving force of harness racing. Call 800-353-6442, the OHHA.
Cashman's Horse Equipment, proudly serving the equine and livestock community for over 40 years. Do you need rubber mats for your horse stalls? Horse safe fencing for your farm? A round pen to exercise your next winter? Cashman's has you covered, featuring the highest quality items at the best prices. Visit our friendly and knowledgeable team Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and shop over 10 acres of inventory. Conveniently located in Delaware, Ohio on US 42 North, just minutes from the home of the iconic Little Brown Jug. Or shop online anytime at cashmans.com.
Love horses? If you show, race, or just like to ride, Ohio State's Galbraith Equine Center is here to help your horse live its best life. Our team of board-certified equine specialists provide world-class medical care and surgical care, 24-hour emergency critical care, neonatal intensive care, and advanced diagnostics and imaging 365 days a year. On-farm care is also available through our Columbus and Marysville locations. Call 614-292-6661. Ohio State's Galbraith Equine Center. Caring. Down to a science.
No question about it. And you know, the atmosphere in the state of harness racing, especially with the advent of expanding gaming, the way things are in the state of Ohio right now really allows for that kind of strategy to be effective.
Yeah. I mean, we're blessed with basically the best. I mean, it's not like we just have Sire Stakes or just have Buckeye Stallion. And the Buckeye Stallion series is another, you know, very nice thing that they added a few years back. And it's kind of like in between the Sire Stakes and the fairs. And I mean, it still takes a nice horse to be a good Buckeye Stallion horse. And we had quite a few this year that did good in there. And, you know, we had a couple or whatever that made the finals. And I mean, usually if I have a fair horse, if I have a horse that I stake and march to the fairs, chances are I'll stake it to the Buckeye, because it's such a race that you don't shy away from. I mean, the nomination fee is $250, and the money's good, and you can kind of, I mean, you don't always dodge all the Sire Stake horses, but it's just a race where you don't have to be top tier caliber to still be successful in. And like I said, they go for a lot of money. So, I mean, years ago when I, you know, started talking about flipping burgers when I quit and started working as a groom, I mean, back then we were racing for just peanuts, you know, and those abilities weren't possible. You couldn't pick and choose and manage horses like I do now, because you didn't have all those choices. I mean, Ohio has really stepped it up, and it's quite different than it was 20 years ago.
You know, now, Rosie, I'll tell you, I got to give you a lot of credit. You make it sound so easy, you know, and I know that's from years of experience and all that. But, you know, in that article, and once again, it's a great article. Please check it out. It's Bob Roberts, Press Pros Magazine. It's pressprosmagazine.com. Last year, you guys had certainly a little bit of a problem with the feed supply that really, you know, certainly was bad, but certainly could have been, had the potential to be a lot worse than what it actually turned out to be.
Oh, it was a lot better than it should have been. I mean, and the only reason it turned out as decent as it did, I mean, not that there was a right time for it to happen, but if you could pick a time of the year for it to happen, it would have been then, because when I go to Aiken, South Carolina, like usually a week or two before I plan on heading back, I kind of back off the training schedule for those horses just to kind of make sure their immune systems are all good and they're all alive and energetic. Their legs are all ready to rock to go ship and everything. I might go a little bit overboard on the break side of things, because I'll turn them out down there and they're pretty ornery when they head back. And then when they come back, I give them another day or two. Just, I'd rather give them an extra day or two or three than a day not enough. And we come back in April, so that's plenty early enough to where you can afford to have, you know, to back off and ease off or whatever. But point is, when they did come home, they were all bouncing off the walls, super healthy, you know, coming out of the South Carolina sun from April, you know, it's really hot down there by then and everything. So it's not like they were like run down from training or stressed out from racing or anything like that. And then they got exposed to this corn. And what happened is, I've had my same feed mill for years and years. And every year when I come home from Aiken, I just call the guy that delivers the grain and tell him, you know, hey, we're coming back. We need a ton of grain. And I have a big tank, bulk tank in my barn. And he always unloads a bunch of grain. And well, I don't take the grain from up here down there. When I ship down, I have a mill make my feed down there. So when I come home, first batch of feed, I was like, man, this is a lot of corn. And I'm really picky about my feed situation, hay and grain. I'm a little picky about that, but I think it's a good thing to be picky about. And then, so I was like, it's just me being picky. And I can't, you know, I've been used to feeding an Aiken, and the grain's not exactly the same. So I kind of shrugged it off. And then the next batch was the same. And finally, I was like, what are you guys doing to me? This is nothing but corn. And so what happened when I was in Aiken, and I was not aware of it, is the people that had the mill for years were to the point where they wanted to retire, good people, and they sold the business to a young kid. And the kid, which is something that we would all probably do if we could or tried or whatever, he bought this business, bunch of money, and somebody offered him a bunch of corn for a very cheap price from Iowa. And well, what happened is the corn that he bought was no good, and that's why it was cheap. And he didn't know. It's not like he did something on purpose, but he bought all this corn and they used it to mix into this feed, and he's trying to get ahead, you know, after making a loan and buying this business and whatever, which the corn was fine for cows, most cattle, but horses are as picky and weak stomached as any animal that you can get. And so the corn that they used was moldy inside the kernel.
Oh my goodness.
And when they chopped up the corn, like they cracked the corn for the grain, you couldn't see it because the corn was into little specks. Well, these horses, they ate it because, I mean, there was, it didn't smell bad, it didn't look bad, but they ate it. And we come home, and a month after we got home, we started qualifying three-year-olds, and they qualified okay. And but the next three starts, every start they raced, they just were worse and worse and worse. And we were doing all the same things that we always do. And I'm not saying we always win. That's not at all what I mean. But usually we show up and race decent. And these things were like first at the three-quarter pole, last at the wire. And the one horse was like so bad, the vet came out to check his heart. And all of a sudden, everything was just falling apart. Even the horses training, they started interfering. Like horses that never wore knee boots or anything, they were just like smacking their knees. And I don't have hardly any tie-up issues. It was horses tying up. I mean, when you have 40 horses, they reacted differently all over the barn. Mm. But they were all not right. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, something's going on here where it's affecting all of them. There's only a few things that could be hay, grain, water, and shavings. So we X'd the shavings and the hay out pretty quick because I always get it from the same place. My brother makes my hay, and I was feeding that very hay before I went to Aiken, and everything was fine. So finally we got the water and the grain tested, and the grain come back, and the toxin level, next to the toxin level number, in parentheses, it said high risk of death.
Oh, my goodness.
And I had three vets. I mean, I could go on for a day about this whole thing, but I had three vets working on my horses for 4 months. And every one of them were accomplished, like well-known, not like mom and pop shops. They were vets for a long time, successful ones. And every one of them said my entire stable should have died.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what.
And I should have at least lost some horses. And there was not one horse in my stable that actually ended up dying. There was a bunch of horses that we had to sell and never raced, but none of them actually died. And I mean, for 3 months, the vets were there constantly, and we were like, they were dehydrated, their livers were ready to shut down, their kidneys were messed up. Like, it was an absolute catastrophe. I mean, these horses got so bad where you wanted to turn them out. Like, the normal way of turning a yearling or a two-year-old out in the paddock in the morning is, it's like, good luck making it out there before they get loose, tail up over their back, prancing, ready to play. Not these guys. You had to drag them out. And sometimes they just stood there and didn't even move, didn't even take a step for hours. Then you'd go out and drag him back in. And I never forget the one day one of the kids come in, we were jogging. One of the kids come in, he's like, hey, did you see that horse out in the paddock? I'm like, no, I'm thinking, you know, he probably died. He's like, he was trotting around. And it just hit me. I'm like, that's ridiculous. Like, how sad is it that my guys are getting excited because they see a horse trotting in the field? that just shows you how bad it really was.
Well, that was a great, great interview. Super excited to have a chance to sit down with Rosie Weaver, especially after I had a chance to read that article that Bob Roberts put together. One more time, PressProsMagazine.com. Good friend Bob Roberts with that long story on Rosie Weaver. And I thought, you know, that would be cool on this radio show to kind of expand on that. And sounds like we certainly did. But, you know, here's a stable that overcame a lot of adversity in that time period that Rosie just spoke of to come back, to have one heck of a year. You know, with a single season victory record, 100 races, $822,000. The stable, along with, of course, Rosie, is going to be recognized at the OHHA annual banquet coming up in Columbus. So hats off to Rosie. And, you know, listen, we talked about how great racing is and how healthy the sport is here in the state of Ohio. And that really allows somebody like Rosie to properly classify their horses. Listen, if they're not good enough to go in the Sire Stakes, they're not good enough to go in the Stallion Series. You have the Ferris Circuit. You have so many options, you know, to make money. And, you know, that makes the racing a lot more competitive, by the way, for us that like to pluck a couple of bucks down on the sport. Listen, we certainly appreciate each and every one of you joining us. Of course, we couldn't do it without our sponsors, the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Breed in Ohio. Buy in Ohio. Race in Ohio, win in Ohio. The Ohio State University Veterinary Medical Center. They've got Caring Down to a Science and Cashman's Horse Equipment Outlet and Drive-Through Feed Store. Visit them online at cashmans.com. We will see you next Saturday morning with a first post of 9:30 a.m. on Off to the Races. So long.
Cashman's Horse Equipment, proudly serving the equine and livestock community for over 40 years. Do you need rubber mats for your horse stalls? Horse safe fencing for your farm? A round pen to exercise your next winter? Cashman's has you covered, featuring the highest quality items at the best prices. Visit our friendly and knowledgeable team Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and shop over 10 acres of inventory. Conveniently located in Delaware, Ohio on US 42 North, just minutes from the home of the iconic Little Brown Jug. Or shop online anytime at cashmans.com.
Love horses? If you show, race, or just like to ride, Ohio State's Galbraith Equine Center is here to help your horse live its best life. Our team of board-certified equine specialists provide world-class medical care and surgical care, 24-hour emergency critical care, neonatal intensive care, and advanced diagnostics and imaging 365 days a year. On-farm care is also available through our Columbus and Marysville locations. Call 614-292-6661. Ohio State's Galbraith Equine Center. Caring. Down to a science.
Join the fast-paced, exciting world of harness racing. There are hundreds of immediate openings across Ohio for caretakers and grooms. Work with the greatest equine athletes in the country. Standardbred trainers need your help. Health insurance, vision care, prescription benefits, and a retirement plan are available for those that qualify. For more information on how you can be a part of the exciting world of harness racing, call 614-221-3650. That's 614-221-3650. 3650.